thanks for coming this morning. We, when I was working with Dr. Geddes and her biologist, Kyle Thayer, we did some work with crested floating heart at the University of Florida. And we looked at the effects of substrate and fertilizer level on the ramet production with crested floating heart. And you may not know what ramets are, but I'll get into that and tell you what they do. So to start out, what is crested floating heart? As she had said, it is a floating plant. It looks very similar to a lily. The leaves are not as big as the normal lilies are, the Mexican lilies, and the flowers are much smaller than the Mexican lilies, and they're erect, so they come above the water. This is the flower of crested floating heart. It's very pretty. It's white. It has a crest on each petal. And that's where it gets its name from, the crested. And then the floating heart comes from the leaf shape. But its Latin name is Nymphoides cristata. It's native to Asia, and it was known as an ornamental plant and is brought over as an ornamental plant, and it's called snowflake. It was first found in southwest Florida, Collier County, in 1996, and has really taken off in that area in the canals with a lot of the other species like Rotala and Hygropila. It was found also in South Carolina first in 2006 in the Santee Cooper, where now they're managing multiple thousands of acres there. Its legal status first started out in 2005 in FLEPSI. It was considered a Category 2. FLEPSI is the Florida Exotic Plant Pest Council. And what a Category 2 plant is it's a non-native invasive that's increased in its abundance, but hasn't started overtaking natural populations. So in 2009, it jumped up to a Category 1. And what a Category 1 is where it has started out competing other native populations in the area to where it's becoming a real problem. In 2013, it made FDAC's noxious weed list, and I believe this is one of the fastest weeds to, once its introduction, to make the FDAC's noxious weed list. As far as identification of crested floating heart, the heart-shaped leaves are very noticeable. You can see here the different color in leaves. Like sometimes they stay very green all the way around. Other times they get this red kind of tinge color, most of the time with more light availability. The flowers, as I said before, they're very white, or the white, and they'll kind of take over the whole canal, and they have that crest on each petal. These are the ramets. So at each petal, it'll produce an offshoot of a potential another plant. We call these ramets, and they're also called their rhizomes. So they're the root section of the plant, and they will come off and make another petal and another flower. And this is the flower with the crest, where it gets its name from the crested floating heart. However, there are a lot of species in Florida that are very similar. This is banana lily, Nymphoides aquatica. So it's in the same genus, but this is a native species to Florida. You can see the leaves are similar, the flowers are similar, but the petals are not quite that heart shape. And it does produce the same ramet style, so that is one of its ways that it propagates, but you can tell the ramets are not quite as small. They're a little bit bigger and clumpier than cristata. But they do propagate the same way as far as being able to shoot off of the mother plant and eventually become a new plant. However, the flowers are similar at the first look, but they don't have that crest on each petal like cristata does. So we have another one. This one is not native. This is the snowflake lily, or water snowflake, and it is Nymphoides indica. It has a little bit more of a, I guess, elongated leaf. It's not quite as round as banana lily. It does have a white flower like banana lily and cristata, except its flower, it has more of like a heavily fringed flower petal, and it kind of looks like a pipe cleaner. So that's one of the ways that you can tell the difference between those. This species also has a yellow producing flower. So it's the same species, but produces two different flower colors. So then our next species, oh, and snowflake is also not native. It's not native as well. Another species that we have is Nymphoides peltata, which is also not native, which is yellow floating heart. It, as far as we know, doesn't have the issues that cristata does. However, it does have the more heart-shaped leaves. We don't think that its main way of producing or propagating is through the ramet production. We do think that it is through seeds, but we don't think it's through the ramets. And this is very distinguishable. It doesn't have the crest on each petal, but all the flowers are yellow. So as far as telling them apart, from a distance, it can be difficult. I mean, with all the white ones, you can't tell until you really get up there, because some of the leaves do alter shape and color, especially with cristata. I've been doing some work up in Gainesville too, and with their Nymphoides cristata looks completely different from the ones that we have down in South Florida, which may be a belief of a little bit of crossbreeding, but we don't know. So this is the snowflake lily. Once you get close to it, it's very easily identified with the heavily fringed leaves. This is Nymphoides cristata, which is the crested floating heart. And once you do get up close to it, you're able to tell that it has that crest on each petal. This is our native, the banana lily. You can tell the lily pads are different from the others, but very close to snowflake. But the flower is much different. And then we have our yellow floating heart, which you can tell from a distance is definitely different from all the other ones just because of the color, unless you have one of the yellow snowflake lilies. So how bad is crested floating heart? We don't really have a great idea. We just know that we've had a lot of issues with it, like in the Santee Cooper, where they're having a really difficult time harvesting all of it. And with the issues of just managing floating plants as they are, and this isn't one of your big floating leaf plants like the lilies and lotuses. This is more of a smaller leaf, so you kind of have that small battle of the small leaf, or the small floating plants, floating leaves, and the reproduction propagation. So is it producing mainly through seeds? We don't really know. It does produce seeds, but we don't know how viable they are, and there hasn't been a lot of stuff that's been done with them. However, we do know that it does produce the ramets, but we don't know how many ramets, we don't know how often or how viable they are. So we got with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they helped us with funding this research, and they had recently done some research on life history and all that kind of stuff, because it is fairly new. So as far as ramet production, we looked at five different substrates. And we went from 100% sand to 100% organic matter. And that's measured through volume, not weight. Then we also did four fertilizer rates. We went from 0 grams per liter to 4 grams per liter. We did them in dish pans. And I think our liters that we had were about 6 liters in each one of substrate. We did four replications. And then we did one single small plant. So we took one plant that only had maybe two or three shoots that were up to the top, and placed them in each dish pan and let them grow out for 6 months. So we started out with monthly ramet counts, and that was working fairly well. And then we've done two complete runs so far, and then we have two more to go. So our first run, we had 1 month after planting, we had an average of 4 ramets per plant. And this is just one plant, so each plant, once the leaf hits the top, it grows and has a connection to another plant. And that's the ramet where the rhizome and has a whole other leaf, and it can have like a chain. So we call it the one single beginning plant, the mother plant. And then what we call them the cristata babies, because they just kind of all just take off and they all come back to the mom. So after we count the ramets from that one plant, we remove them from the tank. So that way we're not having double counting or anything like that. We remove them from the tank, so each month it starts over. It's set back to zero for each month. So the second month, we had 70 ramets per plant, which when we were counting them, it was about 5,600 plants in total. And these were all grown in maybe a quarter meter squared. So we had those sections. And because at first we started out with all of them in one tank, and we were like, oh, this is going to be a real problem. So we need to separate these because they were just growing and taking off. So then we separated them into each section with screens. So by our third month planting, we're having to count twice a month instead of once a month because their numbers are getting so high and they're getting so intertangled that we're not sure if what we're pulling off is truly a ramet or if it's just a leaf, because it produces a leaf, and then once that leaf, I guess, receives enough energy, it starts producing the rhizomes. And then once it first produces the rhizome, we consider that a ramet. So once it is potentially able to have a root section and be able to pull nutrients by itself, if it were to be separated, that's what we call it, a ramet. And we were having to pick those up twice a month instead of just once a month because it was so intensely infested. So for our results, we found that substrate has no effect. Doesn't matter if it's in pure sand or pure organic matter, there's no significant difference, both biological and statistical. But fertilizer is much more better. Most plants, the more fertilizer you give them, the more they grow, but this was very, very noticeable. So we have our fertilizers in grams per liter, 0 to 4, and you can see they all kind of started out slow after 1 month, but then after that they kind of jumped up and started to peak off. But we do see that there's major differences going from 0, 1, 2 to 4 across the board here at each month. It stays consistent. And this is just with all of them grouped. This is all of them grouped into the fertilizer levels. So then if we look at that per plant. So this is per plant on average per month. So this is 1 month, you know, not too much of a difference here, but as we get out to 2 and 3 and 4 months, we see per plant at 6 months, we almost have 500 plants produced from one plant, 500 ramets. So ramet production, what is our projection? So if we look at our 0 grams per liter of fertilizer, since that was the driving factor, we see that our original plant had a total from each month, so this is 1 month, 2 months, and on through six, we see that it has a total of 52 ramets that it produced in 6 months. So if each one of these 52 ramets follows this same kind of average, how many plants are we going to end up? So we kind of extrapolated this out, and at the end of all this, we see that, okay, well, if each one of these ramets produce another, each one of these original ramets are plants, and they produce the same amount, we end up with a lot of plants. We end up with about 2,700 ramets from one plant. But when we go into the 4 grams per liter, where we had almost 500 plants from one plant, we see that we ended up with actually 478 ramets from that one plant. And this is kind of the same step here, except the numbers are much, much, much bigger, to where we actually end up with over 200,000 ramets from one single plant, which is a lot of ramets. And if the big question here is, does one ramet make one plant? So we looked at that as well at a sprouting study. So we kept our fertilizer consistent at 2 grams per liter, and we looked at all the same substrates to see if maybe it has an effect on sprouting. And then we did our big thing here was the burial depths, because not all plants land in the same orientation or depth within the substrate. So we looked at surface, half buried, covered, 2 centimeters under the surface and 4 centimeters under the surface. We had 8 replications, and this was one single ramet in each burial type. And then they were checked on 3 times a week to see if they had sprouted or if they had topped out. And we have 3 of these runs done so far, and there's 1 more to go. So sprouting results, substrate had no effect again, except the burial depth had a very large effect. We found that the more that they were covered, the less we had. So our ones that were 4 centimeters and 2 centimeters below the surface they pretty much did not sprout, did not reach the top. But the ones that were just barely covered, where the top of the ramet was still above the surface, or the ones that were half covered or on top, most of those ended up sprouting. So if we have a ramet that is 2 centimeters or more under the surface, it's only 1% sprout. So it's not really a huge issue. If it's barely covered, we have about 20%. If they're not covered, that's where they become a real problem. And the way that these plants work is once they develop those ramets, they quit receiving nutrients from the mother plant. And they will break off, and then they float because they have a floating leaf, and that floating leaf disintegrates and dies and degrades, and it floats to the bottom. And when it hits the bottom, most of the time it's not, unless it's in a real fluxy, you know, substrate type, it's going to sit on top. So that's the way most of these plants are going to, you know, they hit the shore and then they're on top of the shore, and then that's where they can go, and they're able to propagate themselves. Because about half buried, we had 55%, and on the surface of the bottom, we had 48%. So if we say that there's roughly 50% of the ramets are uncovered will sprout, if they're not in that fluxy substrate, then we have a pretty big issue here. Because if we recall back to our 0 grams per liter of fertilizer, one plant makes over 2,700 new ramets. If 50% of those are able to sprout and reach the top, then you know we only have almost 1,400 plants from one plant. However, with the 4 grams per liter of fertilizer, with our highest rate, you know we had about 228,000 ramets from one plant, and if 50% of those are able to make it to the top and start new plants and start over, then we ended up having 114,000 from one single plant, which is incredible that it's able to do that. So this is the dish pans that we had. These are the root mass. These started as just one single baby plant, and I think this one was one that we had in 100% sand. And the root mass was unbelievable, and the amount of ramets that it produced was unbelievable. So the take-home message is this is a bad plant. And if we can manage it, keep on going with it. We're able to do some foliar treatments. We found some things that'll work, and we're trying to get our hands wrapped around it. But the big thing is prevention and early detection and rapid response is critical with this, so identification is key. I'd like to thank UF and IFAS, the Corps, for putting us with this situation, and then the district that we're trying to collaborate with to get some field treatments out with. So with that, I'll take any questions if I have time.
Okay.